Welcome back to the program. How you doing? Well, the Trump presidency is beginning to unravel. Not that it isn't doing that as we speak. Well, it is. Ron, what are you talking about? It started unraveling before it even was raveled. It never raveled. It's been a roller coaster ride from hell for the Trump administration. His approval rating is down to 40%. It's the lowest of, Beelzebub did better. It's really bad. It was bad when he was being inaugurated, and it's gotten even worse since. Things are not going well. What's being shown is that he doesn't know how to run a country, and perhaps the business thing probably wasn't working out real well anyway. This is even worse. He has brought people into his cabinet. He has assigned titles and positions to people, and they are failing at them. His communications with the American people and the media are nil. There are conflicting responses to everything. His White House press secretary, his White House people, Kellyanne Conway, the president himself, all say different stuff about the same thing, conflicting. Nobody knows who's telling the truth and who isn't. All the facts are basically unfounded. It's still being based off what people hear. Very recently, Donald Trump, who is now the president, it's difficult for me to say that, within the past week got up in front of the American people and said that the unemployment rate in this country could be as high as 40-45%. Not 40%. Not 45%, but 40 or 45%. He doesn't know. It's somewhere in there. So he's stating facts, but he doesn't know what they are. By the way, the unemployment rate officially is 4.5%, which is the lowest it's been in almost a decade, and then some since the big bank debacle thing. But Trump says, well, that's not the way we really measure things. And that's true. There are a lot of people that don't look for work anymore. But there are also a lot of people who retired who aren't working anyway. But to say that nearly half the country is unemployed is perhaps not the case. But yet he said it. I have to laugh because it is so freaking funny. And now, of course, it's funny at our expense. But what the hell, it's a laugh. The federal government is, and Donald Trump thought that he could run the planet. You see, if he was president, he thought he could run the table. He could run the planet. But unfortunately, the federal government also has jurisdiction over the White House as well. And it's a separate entity. There are two investigations that are now being set up and will be ongoing. One of them is against one of Trump's appointees, who apparently had business ties with Russia and had been having conversations with Russia before the election. And that's illegal to do. That is against the law. And he lied about that to the president, or the president knew about it and didn't tell everybody else. Actually lied to the vice president and said that that didn't happen, when indeed it's been admitted that it did. There have been resignations. The White House says the resignation of this particular person, this appointee, that they asked him to resign. Somebody else in the White House, in the same White House where the president works, says that the guy resigned and that the president didn't ask him to resign. He resigned on his own. Conflicting two things coming out of the same place. Kellyanne Conway, who apparently isn't part of all the White House meetings, goes out to the press and tells them what she thinks, even though it's totally wrong. It's odd. It's just odd. Kellyanne Conway is also being investigated by the federal ethics because she publicly told people to go to Nordstrom's and buy Ivanka Trump's clothing line. And of course, Nordstrom says they're dropping Ivanka Trump's clothing line because it's not selling well now. And the president of the United States actually got up, tweeted the country and said, this is horrible. Nordstrom's is terrible to treat my daughter like this. Excuse me, Donald? You've not dreamt contractors or business things in your lifetime? And you thought that were you terrible because you hurt people when you dropped their business? This man is just so one-sided with himself that it becomes dangerous. So anyway, Kellyanne Conway is going to be investigated as well by the ethics committee, because you cannot be a part of an administration and then ask somebody to buy your daughter's clothing line. That's wrong. And I don't understand why Nordstrom's doesn't sue President-elect Trump. I'm sorry. That was wishful thinking. President Trump, they should sue him. They should sue him for loss of business or for defamatory comments against their business. The Trump administration is falling apart, but it's falling apart quickly. I didn't think investigations would start until August. I said that publicly. Apparently, they're beginning now on quite a few different fronts. It's unraveling. I don't think it was ever raveled to be unraveled. Don't you have to have something raveled to unravel it? I don't think it was ever raveled. Anyway, that's where that stands. Every day to me is I wouldn't say a dark day, but a day that it's just very sad that we have to be in it. And I know that's not necessarily your opinion. It's certainly mine. But you watch and see what happens as the days tick on. You just watch and see. Anyway, we're going to move on from that because I promised that I would not unravel.
Are you aware that one in every seven Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
And a good message it is. Here's my prediction. This Trump presidency, or so-called Trump presidency, will take the same path as what happened to Nixon. There will be an impeachment. There will be an investigation. And you will find through phone conversations, through records, through documents, but mostly through Trump's own words publicly, you will find that Donald Trump is doing two things. One, that he is exercising his staff, Stephen Miller, Bannon, all those people are in position in order to unravel the government so that Trump becomes somewhat of a dictator. That is the focus. The investigation will be in that direction, where he is impeding democracy. And you will also find that his ties with Russia are not only through many of his cabinet members, but actually through himself, that he actually has had great conversations with Russia and Putin. He admires Putin. He admires the fact that when Putin does something or says something, the people listen and the people follow him. Yeah, that's because that's a dictatorship, Donald. That's what that's called, and I know that's what you would like. He has also stated, in front of all of us, and I'm almost quoting him, during the election, I encourage Or I ask Russia to hack further into Hillary's emails and to come up with more stuff. He actually encouraged the hacking of another nation to get involved in, and he was basically saying, I don't know if he's saying if Russia is hacking or acknowledging that Russia was hacking into our systems, but in any event, he was saying, yes, continue to do so, Russia. That is undeniable. Yes, continue to hack into our government offices in order to expose Hillary Clinton. Continue to do that, Russia. I don't understand why that was not majorly investigated, but it will be, because this is all going to come out now. And I still think that by August, we're going to be in some type of impeachment hearing situation, and or he will have done so many egregious things that his popularity rating will go from 40 down to like 2. All right, let's move on. I'm sorry. I apologize. I get wrapped up in these political conversations because believe it or not, it's funny on Saturday Night Live. It's funny how absurd and ridiculous it is, but it's not funny that you're playing with the country that I live in and you're playing with its very foundation. That's not funny. So let's move on. Let's go to John Livy, who is in Boston, which is just down the street from us here. And we're going to talk about greenhouse gases. Now, I have gas. I've admitted it many times before. I don't know if it affects the greenhouse, which is across the street where guys are growing pot, apparently, or something. I don't know. The greenhouse gas. I don't know if my gas is green. I don't see it, but I certainly do know that the gas affects the house. Okay, fine. Let's speak to John. And first of all, my apologies to you, John, for giving you an introduction like that. But greenhouse gases are something we should be talking about without question. Jonathan Livy is a professor of environment health at Boston University School of Public Health. And he joins us now. We're talking about some important things in my estimation. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
There is an entity called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. What is that?
So the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI for shorthand, is a program across states throughout the Northeast trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, pollutants that can contribute to climate change. And they try to do it through a mechanism that really takes advantage of the free market and allows for essentially plants to buy permits to emit carbon dioxide and then tries to use that to reduce emissions overall.
And this is a state-by-state situation, or is it a federal situation?
It's done at the state and regional level, so a number of states across New England and the Mid-Atlantic opted into this program. So there's 9 states, including Massachusetts, that are a part of it.
Okay. This basically represents, as I understand it, the citizens of any given community who are concerned about their environment, their breathing, their air quality.
I think, you know, one of the important things about REGI, it's targeting climate change, and so that has a big scale that affects everybody globally. But the power plants that are affected by REGI also emit other air pollutants, and a lot of those are ones that can affect people's lungs, people's hearts, you know, at a local and regional level. So even if that's not the focus of the program, those benefits come along with the program as you get cleaner power plants.
Now, and of course, the coal entity is pretty much out of the picture as far as certainly these states are concerned. We're talking about natural gas.
There is still some coal that is around, and especially in the early years of REGI. You know, the REGI program does stretch out to include states like Pennsylvania, and so it's not just restricted to New England states. Yeah. But there are, you know, clearly a lot of entities that are natural gas fired that are affected. Any oil that remains, certainly any coal that remains, especially again in the early years of REGI, are all influenced.
Right. And now in Massachusetts, which is a very environmentally conscious state, let's say, for the, in the long run, there are still some major battles going on now in some areas. I know one in Brockton, Massachusetts, where there's a consideration of where the municipality wants to put this up because it would be revenue, they believe, for them. But the residents don't want it for air quality purposes because it's in an urban area where people don't speak much English. But that battle in particular has gone on for over a decade now.
Yeah, I mean, how we get our electricity is, you know, a complicated story. Clearly,
sure,
we need the power plants to be there to generate electricity. But I think one of the advantages of REGI is, you know, beyond trying to come up with cleaner generation, the funds that are raised by these power producers purchasing the right essentially to emit carbon dioxide are then funneled back into the states to support things like energy efficiency programs.
Uh-huh.
So if we then use less electricity, we won't need as many power plants to be built, and so you can get potentially a virtuous cycle where you know, we're reducing our demand, we're reducing the need to build new plants,
sure,
and that will help with our emissions and our local air quality.
Yeah. Well, as I understand, in most areas of the Northeast, there is not a shortage of power. This is simply a method of selling to the grid for economic purposes, that there is not that need.
Yeah, I certainly couldn't speak to the details of the electricity grid and demand over time,
right,
but you know, I think broadly, you know, again, programs like REGI try to put a system in place so that we get the right amount of electricity being generated, that those new facilities that are getting built are encouraged to be as clean as possible, because otherwise, you know, they're not able to meet the mandates of a program such as this. So I think it provides a backdrop along with all the other state and federal regulations to encourage, you know, the right amount of electricity to be produced and the right number of facilities to be built, but to make sure that they are as clean as possible.
Right. Now, this was instituted in 2009. How has it been going so far?
It's been a big success, I think, by every metric. So a recent report by APS Associates showed that not only have carbon dioxide emissions or greenhouse gases gone down even a little faster than the program hoped, there were air quality and then public health benefits as we had, you know, cleaner power plants and less electricity being used. It also actually saved people money, so people's electricity bills went down as a result of the program, and there was a net increase in jobs created throughout the Northeast. So
Excellent.
You had an improved economy, you had more money in people's pockets, cleaner air, and reduced carbon dioxide emissions, which was the target of the program.
Wonderful.
So, you know, it's hard to argue against those successes, and I think that's one reason why are encouraging the program to keep pushing forward and even to move at a more rapid pace and get further emission reductions.
That would be great, but unfortunately, all of a sudden, we're in question about the future of many of these environmental initiatives, both because of Republican governor in Massachusetts, and of course, we all know about the federal situation going on. So that has that brought into question the future or the drive of the initiative?
I mean, I think first, Governor Baker, I think, has been a strong supporter
Good.
Of the REGI program
Good.
And of its, you know, continuation and continued reduced emissions.
Uh-huh.
So I think at a state level, there is a lot of interest in the program because it has been so beneficial at so many levels. In terms of the federal government, I think, again, some of the activity on these topics are really going to happen at the state and local level for now, and hopefully programs like REGI provide a demonstration of how to do it right. If there are concerns that addressing greenhouse gas emissions are going to tank the economy and cost people a lot of money, a demonstration that it actually improves the economy and saves money and cleans up the air gives examples that other states can follow, and if states continue to be, you know, the laboratories of democracy, eventually the ideas could bubble up to the federal level, or if they don't, a lot of actions are happening at the state and local level that are providing, you know, similar types of benefits.
Yeah, that's one situation where the states can probably regulate and better themselves than the federal government, because there's always a question of, under this particular administration, as far as I'm concerned, whether common sense necessarily comes into play. But short of that, have all the states in the initiative actually done well? Has it been a few or all of them?
Everybody has done well. The air pollutants that come from these power plants have pretty wide regional benefits. And so the study showed that, you know, every state in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic received some public health benefit as a result of the program. Yeah. In fact, this included some states that weren't even part of the program because you know, air pollution doesn't know state boundaries.
Correct.
So New Jersey dropped out of the program early on, and they are still receiving some of the benefits of the program by virtue of being downwind of other facilities.
Correct.
So the benefits are pretty widespread, and the report that's been put out by Apt Associates actually put some numbers to the health benefits in each one of the states that are both included in REGI and that are neighboring states that are not actually part of the program.
Yeah. So the future looks good, but I guess the situation is we have to stay active in this.
I think so, and this is, again, it's a great demonstration of how a well-designed program can provide benefits, and I think if the program continues with more rapid emission reductions, we can see even more types of benefits. You know, for example, as the electricity grid gets cleaner and cleaner, having something like electric cars becomes more environmentally beneficial. The worry is if you have electric cars or using more electricity for other purposes, if that electricity is coming from a dirtier source, you're not necessarily helping things. But if you have a cleaner electricity grid, it opens up more opportunities to do other things. So as we sort of continue to clean up and clean up the air and reduce our carbon footprint, we may have other more creative technologies that can come online that can accelerate our path toward a cleaner environment.
Well, that's the bottom line message, isn't it? That this program initiative has shown that there are economic benefits to a cleaner environment, and that was always the problem because things stayed dirty because economically it was more fruitful dollar-wise to stay dirty because it was cheaper to stay dirty. Now I guess we're crossing the line where we're starting to prove that no, that's not correct. So now companies may shift into a greener mode, realizing that there's money there. The only reason they're going to shift is because there's money there. Do I read that accurately?
Yeah, but I think part of the important part of the story is where does the money flow and how do you put in systems to capture it, meaning there have been analyses for a long time that have shown that environmental regulations pay for themselves, but the way they pay for themselves is by reducing the health burden on people, making people healthier, and so that money doesn't necessarily flow to the power companies. That money flows to all of society.
Right.
So we need to figure out mechanisms to recognize that if putting a little bit more money into environmental controls leads to large health benefits that you can put a dollar sign on, how do we make sure that everybody gains from those benefits and we do the accounting right so we count for it? And again, the Apt Associates study showed that the health savings over this five-year period could be quantified at $5.7 billion.
Right.
So this is not money that goes into the pockets or is taken out of the pockets of the power producers. It's money that really is a benefit to us society-wide.
Right, but as long as there's more oil in the ground than coal in the ground, which is dirty, then companies will always try to defend that so that they've got the equipment set up. Why not keep pumping? But they have to understand that investment in something greener might yield them even more. And I guess that's part of the battle, too. I mean, there's no question that we all benefit economically and health-wise from a greener environment.
Yeah, and again, the reason that programs like REGI exist is to provide the economic incentive to point people in the right direction. So, you know, companies are not doing the right thing just because they want to do the right thing.
Right.
This program says, you know, you're not forbidden from emitting these pollutants, but if you do, there's going to be a greater price for it.
Right.
And then companies can put that into their accounting and decide if they want to continue with certain technologies and pay a premium for it, or move to cleaner technologies and derive some economic benefit from these programs.
Yeah. Well,
these kinds of trading programs with a target and a cap that ratchets down over time have been successful for a long period of time. The first President Bush put in a similar kind of program in the early 90s to deal with acid rain, and it was highly successful. So these types of programs are really mimicked on previous programs that have really been quite successful.
Yes, yes. And the initiative has actually shown numbers-wise how that is successful, and that's a great success. And I hope we can continue that in even a larger manner and impress communities accordingly. John, it's a pleasure speaking to you. Interesting conversation. We could go on forever, but I guess we can't. But thanks for bringing it to everybody's attention. How would people find out more about this subject matter?
Looking for this report by the group Apt Associates would be a good start, and they have a nice summary of what the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is and what all of the benefits are that would derive from that. So I think just becoming informed what the program is and then ultimately trying to advocate at the policy level that we should continue the investment in it and increase our rate of emission reductions to derive this wide range of benefits.
Beautiful. John, thank you, Levy. John Levy, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Did I say John, thank you, Levy? Dyslexia is setting in. John, thank you, Levy. What? What did you say to me? I'm sorry. All the information was there. It was just like garbled up in different directions. But it's the thought that counts. It's the thought that counts. It's not what I say. It's a thought that counts. John, thank you, Levy. Whatever. Greenhouse gas, ladies and gentlemen. Can't believe we're even talking about that stuff. Can't even believe that's even a problem. How is that even a problem? How did it get to the point where we fucked things up so much and then we put little band-aids on it like, okay, now we're taking care of it? No, we're not. We're doomed because of people like you. Not you, but you. Not you. No. Move your head. Not you. Not you. No. Back there for... Yeah, you. Do you know there is actually a society of people that think that the earth is flat? Still, today, as we sit here now, there's a large group of people who think that the earth is flat. I think Trump is one of them. Well, he obviously still believes that tanning is good for you. I don't know if he tans or he puts orange makeup on or what. What is that? What is that on your face? And then your eyes, like around your eyelids, you know, and under your eyes, that's like white because you're a very white guy. You're a very white Caucasian. But then your face is orange. What are you doing? What is that? What are you, a rodeo clown? What is going on with that? Seriously, what's the deal there? Have you noticed that Donald so-called Trump is starting to age already? Usually it takes presidents like 4 to 8 years to have their hair turn gray or to start getting the wrinkles, and they look very weathered, like they've been through a car wash 2,000 times and didn't roll the windows up. Donald's starting to look like that already after a month. He's going to be like a prune by the time this thing is over, or certainly by the time the impeachment proceedings begin. I don't know, man. Hey, thanks for joining me today, and thanks for putting up with me. I've put up with you, I think that's kind of fair. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. And John, thank you, Levy. John, thank you, Levy. Thank you. Well, it's Tuesday, February 15th. How did you survive Valentine's Day? Are you all right? Are you okay?
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Well, let me tell you, it's...
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. Yes, I am. I can't hide from it anymore. I try, but they find me. A-D-B. Whew. I had a nice Valentine's Day yesterday. It was full of all the Valentine's Day exercises as written in the manual. The Valentine's Day, this is how you're supposed to spend the day manual. I went to the movies and I saw a horrible movie. A movie that looked like it took so much effort and toil and time to produce, and yet it sucked big, big, horrible things. It's the Lego movie, a Batman thing. I guess I didn't see the first Lego movie, but I understand it was very witty and cute and adorable and just very, very nicely fun for all ages. Adults loved it. Children loved it. It was just wonderful. So they come out with another Lego movie, and this is the Lego Batman movie, and I watched a little teasers on TV, and it looked, again, very, very funny and very clever. So I go to the movies, and it's in 3D, and I figure, that's a lot of Ds. So I'm sitting in the theater, I put the glasses on, and everything's fun with the 3D, you know, like you can reach out and make believe you're touching something, but it's not really there. Very similar to having sexual desires toward a woman you'll never talk to, that kind of thing. But as the movie progresses, it starts to get very, very violent. It's about the Joker and all the horrible villains in the Batman thing, all in Lego form, destroying Gotham City, and buildings blow up, and the Joker like actually destroys the city, and there's mayhem and people running and screaming and explosions. This is a freaking Lego movie for children. And I'm saying to myself, what the F is going on here? Now, yesterday on the show, I talked about movies just a tad because we were talking about Valentine's Day. And I said in every single movie, maybe except for cartoons, maybe, but in every single motion picture, there is a sex scene where the main character has sex with somebody. And the sex scenes are always like supposed to be artful. But in every you can't have a movie without the main character having sex. And it was like, that was a realization. And you all agreed with me. I know you did. Today, I'm telling you, there are very few movies, if any, where someone doesn't get hurt. Where, if it's a regular movie, not even a cartoon, if it's a regular movie, something's going to blow up. There's going to be an explosive. Maybe the oven will blow up, or terrorists will blow something up, or you know, something's going to blow up. Someone's going to get hurt, and there's going to be blood in it somewhere. There's going to be a fight where there's going to be such an amazing fight where people are slashing each other and kicking each other and throwing themselves through windows. In every single movie, a car, an out-of-control car, is going to go smashing on a main street into some type of a food cart. It's in every single movie. It's required by law. Gotta wipe my nose, I'm so excited. Or as Regis would say, I got the wipe my nose, I'm so excited. That's my Regis impersonation. Did you like it? I'm starting to see the pattern, but when I went to the movies yesterday and saw a Lego movie for children, a cartoon with all this kind of violence and buildings blowing up, and of course Batman is always fighting evil, but not in the sense of that. That's graphic stuff for kids. And again, I make the statement that I make in almost every show. What happened to us? What happened to our society? Why do we have such a thirst for destruction? Why does everything have to involve some form, some level of physical violence? Is that the kind of people we are? For entertainment purposes, do we seek out violence? To be entertained, do we have to watch a movie where someone's head comes off or their arm gets sliced off their bodies? Is this entertainment to us? Do we sit there with a jug of soda and a bucket of popcorn with a big smile on our face as we watch people on a movie screen being maliciously macheted? Is this something that we enjoy? I got up to pee a couple of nights ago. Well, that's every night. And I turn on the TV sometimes because I can't get right back to sleep. And on the you know, the cable stuff, there's the Saw movie. Did you ever see the Saw movies? There's like six or seven of them. And I always thought it was like, oh, the idea of the movie is that it's a movie that you already saw. No. I don't know what the Saw thing is, but it's like sawing people's limbs off and stuff. It's some type of devious, horrible, evil character that lures people into these strange rooms in a strange location and plays these death games with them where their necks get snapped off, their limbs come off, their heads get chopped off, excruciating torture. And this went on for six or seven sequels. It's not like, and it is the most disgusting thing. And people scream when they watch it. They can't stand to watch it. It's so graphically horribly done. Yet it draws everybody to the movie theaters. What's wrong with us? Why do we find this to be entertainment to the point where we just want to watch it over and over and over again? And the answer to all of it is, it's just entertainment, it's not real, and it's nothing like if it really happened to somebody. Okay. So what you're telling me is that I must sit there and I must watch people being tortured horrifically and find it entertaining and want to see it over and over again. I don't think you quite understand what this whole thing is about here. This is supposed to be a very pleasant journey, this thing called life. Now, I know it's not. I know there are speed bumps. There are horrible tragedies to have to deal with emotionally and physically. Horrible things can happen to us in one's lifetime. But those are the kind of things that you kind of want to tend to avoid if humanly possible. No one wishes, I can't wait till I go through my next tragedy. That should be fun. Nobody says this. They wish and they pray for others' safety, well-being, health, a happy, healthy life. That's what we wish for. It's what we pray for. It's what we hope for. And yet somewhere in our strange social makeup, we are entertained when that doesn't happen to people. It's just, you can't make sense of it. You just can't. I should have never gone to the movies yesterday. Look how much this has upset me. And I don't want to be upset. It's not good for me.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, but you need to know that it's okay. We all make mistakes, and we must learn to forgive ourselves. The universe wants us to be happy, whether or not we listen to The Ron Van Dam Show. Nothing is forever, including The Ron Van Dam Show. You will be fine. The universe will try to forget about this one.